This episode of the Ottawa Entrepreneurs Podcast is brought to you by Extension Marketing, the marketing agency that specializes in unique needs and budgets of small to medium-sized businesses. They provide turnkey marketing solutions that get results. You can find out more today at extensionmarketing.com. Now here's your host, Pat Whalen.
Thanks for taking the time to come on our show, Lydia. Really appreciate it.
I'm super happy to be here, Pat.
Why don't you start off just by introducing yourself and your company, please?
Sure. So my name's Lydia DiFrancesco, and I'm a workplace wellness specialist. I started my company Fit and Healthy 365 over 12 years ago now, which is pretty wild to think about that I've been doing it for that long. The very short version of my journey is that I started out as a personal trainer. Actually, I started as a group fitness trainer, and then I switched to do personal training. And then over the years, have just learned new skills, taken on new challenges, created a ton of content and done programs and trainings. And then in about 2017, I started doing Lunch and Learn workshops, because what I realized over all those years and working with hundreds of people was that most people were having the same sort of challenges and struggles. And so I thought, well, how can I reach a broader audience and really share a lot of the lessons and tools and strategies that I practiced in my own life. And so I started doing those. And then, of course, once COVID happened, there was this huge need for people and businesses trying to help their staff be supported. And so businesses exploded, and I did a lot more presentations. I created a ton more content on a variety of different wellness related topics. And I recently just completed a certification as a health and workplace performance practitioner. So I'm really excited to dive into that. So the business has shifted quite a lot, which is maybe some of the things that we'll talk about a little bit. But basically, my big mission now is supporting businesses so that they can help create environments, so a culture of well-being, which will allow them to have a community and a sense and the breeding ground, I don't know if that's the right word, for high performers to exist and to thrive, and to really avoid burnout, which has become so prevalent these days. So it's a pretty big mission. So I kind of do it in, you know, focus on my own sphere of influence and the positive impacts that I'm making. And just really trying to change things in the workplace so that, you know, people can be living healthier lives and having more fun at work.
So Lydia, pre-pandemic, were you going in person, mm-hmm. I would assume, to do these mm-hmm. workshops, or these, or are they retreats, are they workshops? Maybe tell us a bit,
A bit for us, please. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So a lot of it, what I do is workshops. I also have a new program that I created that's a leadership development program designed to help leaders understand how to create a workplace, a well-being culture. So basically, what I've realized is that in most cases in businesses, there's been a really big focus on the individual side of well-being. So, you know, you, Pat, what can you do to make yourself better and make yourself more healthy? So I would come in, I would talk maybe about exercise or sleep or nutrition or even stress management, but it's all about you and the things that you can be doing, which is great. We need that. But there hasn't been as much focus on what is the organization doing? What are the workplace factors that are causing people to be really stressed or overwork or overwhelmed, right? And so for me, it's about wellness is more than just a program. Wellness isn't like a checkbox of, well, we provided this one workshop this quarter on mental health, so yay us, right? Wellness is really looking at in your operations, in fact, and how the business is functioning, operating, what are the processes, how's our communication, and how is well-being impacted by that? And then what can we be doing to change things and tweak things so that it actually has a positive impact on people's well-being? So I do some consulting work in that and some leadership training in that as well. And in terms of in-person, obviously before the pandemic, rarely anything was virtual. And of course, since then, I would say it's a bit of a mix depending on the type of work that I'm doing. A lot of stuff is still virtual. A lot of the work I do for the government is often across the country. So, you know, for example, I have an upcoming workshop that I'm giving to employees who are working in the West and Northern regions. And their own workforce in their branch is all over the place. So some people are in Winnipeg, some people are in Vancouver, some people are in the Northwest Territories, and obviously they're not going to fly together, you know, for one small workshop. So I think it's great that we have this technology that exists now and that's become more mainstream.
Did you find that, you know, during the pandemic, did it have an immediate impact on your business? Did it take a bit of time before people kind of settled and realized, hey, we've got issues here with our team that need to be addressed. We need to seek out someone like yourself. Did it take some time or was it right away?
I would say, so let's say the pandemic started in March, right? Well, it didn't start in March, but that's when the shutdown was. I would say at the beginning first of all, I was on the ball. So we're talking to a group of entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs are often really great about seeing things and learning how to pivot quickly and being very nimble. So I was very nimble and I was in a week, I had a bunch of workshops that used to be in person and I right away flipped them to be, at the time I called them webinars. I shifted that because I've also shifted to a more workshop model as opposed to webinar where it's just me talking for an hour. I like there to be more interaction. But I was very fast on the ball. And so then I was able to just start on LinkedIn and in my newsletters and everything, start talking about the fact that I was available. And my first one that was the most popular for 2 years was building stress resiliency because people did realize very early on that they needed to support their employees in this high stress time. But I would say there were some for sure like early people, and then probably the summer is always slower for things. And then the fall of that first 2020 year, and then up through all the way through till 2021, it was definitely very quite busy with lots of people reaching out and I like to describe it as, I think we were on this track. We were just going at like a turtle pace. And then with COVID, the track of like these well-being conversations got accelerated to, you know, maybe like a bunny rabbit pace, right? If we think about the turtle and the hare story, right? So the conversations were happening for sure. They were just not as many businesses or organizations thinking about well-being. And it just was taking longer. And then with COVID, that conversation just got accelerated, which in my opinion is a great thing because we needed the conversation to be kind of where it's going now.
You mentioned, you do work in the government, but I assume you're also in the private sector. Yes. Within the private sector I think there's such a need for it at all levels. Even a small business of, you know, two or three people, they could have challenges in the workforce that that need to be addressed. Do you have offerings depending on, I'm thinking of our listeners that may want to reach out to you as an example. So
sure.
You have offerings at different, you know, a person owns a 10 person operation. Are you the right fit for that person as well as the 10 to 50 and the 50 and like, do you have a package for everybody?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I think, for the most part, I'm typically working with businesses that have 30 to 50 plus. Yeah. People. And part of the reason, to be honest, is just budgets. Right. Cause I don't obviously do this work for free as much as I would love to. But I do need to make a living too. And so oftentimes, depending on the nature of the company, they just don't have necessarily enough budget set aside for this type of thing. But certainly there is a lot of founder burnout. I'm not sure if that's something that you've talked about on your podcast before.
Yeah.
But that's definitely something that's not my niche necessarily. I certainly could work with people who are founders, but it's definitely something, even like a small group, and sometimes even more so, the smaller the company, the more workload there is. And people do need to learn how to better manage their own selves. And the organization should also be thinking about the processes and how we're, you know, asking people to do so much and it's because they're passionate about it and they want to see the business succeed. But ultimately the business isn't going to succeed if everybody's overworking and eventually is going to, you know, burn out or are not doing their best work. So yeah, I like to work with all different kinds of businesses. I find the tech industry has been the most receptive to this type of work. I think maybe because they are a little more innovative, let's say, and they want to create great workplaces. And there's also a lot of competition for talent. That's something that I hear a lot from tech companies. And having a workplace that you can actually say and prove is a workplace that does support your well-being, I think is a great competitive advantage for a company.
Yeah, I agree. I know when the pandemic first hit, you know, we talked to our, you know, to our various service providers, and we said, how can we up the health and wellness component of our benefits package? Because we knew instinctively, or not, you know, we figured out pretty fast that this is going to be a challenge for anyone. All of a sudden, everyone's working from home for the first, in a lot of cases, for the first time. And what does that look like? And how do we maintain our sense of, you know, of belonging with each other if we're not physically in the same space anymore? So there's a lot of hurdles. We were fortunate, you know, we had clients in the US and across Canada. So, you know, we knew what a Zoom meeting was, and we were pretty well versed in all that. Whereas a lot of our clients, you know, it was all brand new to them, right? So really interesting. So you were really at the forefront of almost the cutting edge of that. So you probably saw things a lot faster than I would have as a business owner with employees. You probably could have predicted that these are certain things you have to prepare for, Pat, in the future during this pandemic. Is that fair to say that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I saw the writing on the wall for sure in terms of the pandemic coming, but even in terms of virtual, like you, I was, like I said, I started doing personal training. So I was doing virtual personal training clients well before the pandemic. And it was always one of those things when I talked about it, people were just like, huh? And they definitely were not interested. And then after the pandemic, of course, everybody was like, oh my God, I would love to work out for my house, right? So it's funny how these things can like a societal norm, right? I guess we could call it, of like the virtual aspect can change and how things can change and shift, which I think is nice. In a way to see that we don't always have to be stuck in the same ways that we do things. Like, we have totally changed how we work because of adding in this virtual aspect, which is, it's so positive in a lot of ways. There are definitely some downsides for sure. And in person absolutely has its moments and its benefits. But I think from a like just overall bigger picture perspective, not just talking about virtual or not virtual, it shows us that we can change how we work, and that it doesn't have to mean that that's a bad thing. All right. We can look at how we're running our businesses and do it differently and maybe better, hopefully.
Let's switch gears a little bit and talk a bit about your entrepreneurial journey. You mentioned you've done this now for 12 years. First of all, congratulations. Any of those big milestones, even someone listening your first year, if it's, you haven't hit your first year anniversary yet, that's a big one. 3, 5, 10, you know, beyond 10, not too many, you know.
Every year is a milestone.
did you always know you wanted to have your own business, or like, kind of take us through that a little bit?
Yeah. No, I wanted to be a lawyer or a diplomat when I was a kid and in high school. And then I learned that being a lawyer was 4 more years after university. And I was like, I like school, but no, that sounds like too much. So I didn't. I actually had a whole variety of careers. If you go on my LinkedIn, you'll see pretty much that they're all there. I've worked in politics. When I was in university, I worked at a call center. I ran a research company. I set up their call center, actually. I worked in communications. I worked in marketing. I basically kind of fell into entrepreneurship, actually. So essentially how it happened was, like I said, I started as a group fitness trainer, and that started because I saw a poster of, you know, at Good Life, where they were like, oh, we're hiring for body pump instructors. And if you don't know, body pump is just it's one of the classes they offer, which I had been a participant in for many, many years. And on a whim, I was like, I think I'd be good at this. I'm going to try out. So I know one of the things that we were maybe going to talk about was lessons. So I like to say that that's a nice lesson, in that sometimes you just like go for something and try it, and you don't never, I did not, when I tried out for that to be an instructor, I was not thinking 25 steps ahead. I wasn't thinking, I want to be an entrepreneur and I want to be in the fitness industry and this is my path forward. That was not even in my mind. I was like, I love this class. I think I'd be good at it. I'm going to just try out. Right. So great lesson there. I tried out, made it, did it, loved it, started a blog because that's what we did back in the early 2010s. And I created a website, all the things. So it became a hobby slash side, small side business, let's say. Like I said, then I became a personal trainer. And then once I was a personal trainer and doing that more full time, that's when I started thinking more about running my own business. And I was in the industry more and had colleagues who had their own studios and were running their own businesses. And so I was talking more to them about how it worked and kind of looking at numbers and that sort of thing. And I realized that I had some bigger goals than, and just different things that I wanted to do that I wasn't able to do in the place that I was working. And there wasn't going to be these future opportunities in this place. And so I talked with one of my friends and crunched some numbers and really just, it made sense that I could go into business for myself. It was a very low investment because I wasn't going to get my own studio. So I was going to rent space and just bring some clients with me that I was already training. And so it was a low risk venture, let's say. If for some reason it didn't work out, I could have easily gone back to find other employment at a gym with a steady paycheck and so on. So I sort of went that route, which was, like I said, low risk. And then I, obviously still here, stuck with it. I will have to say, I did almost quit my business 7 years ago.
Wow.
Because I was just, I was at a place where I felt like I was spinning my wheels and I felt like I was trying really hard and not getting anywhere. And I had kind of lost a bit of the passion and the drive. And so I thought about quitting. And then I talked to a friend. She said, give it 6 months, figure out what kind of changes you need to make. And then if you're still feeling this way, it's okay. Like you can absolutely just stop your business. Lots of people do. So I did that and I'm still here. So it was part of what, if you don't mind me jumping into more lessons.
Yeah, absolutely. Please.
Part of one of the lessons that I learned in that time was something that you as a marketer will love. And I'm sure you tell to all your clients, which is really, really niche down and really understand who my target audience was. And I wasn't doing that. And even though I had been in business masterminds, I've taken marketing classes, I've learned all about it, I worked in marketing for goodness sake. I just felt I was wanting to help everybody. And by wanting to help everybody, then I was helping, I wasn't attracting in the right people. And once I got really specific about exactly who I wanted to attract, and I started talking to that person, you know what I mean by that, that's when it became a lot easier to get clients. And so for anybody out there, Pat's probably talked about this a lot, I'm sure, with him, other guests or by himself. You're not excluding people by doing a niche. And it will absolutely help you bring in more clients when you get more clear about exactly who you're targeting and what their pain points are and how it is that you can help them.
Yeah, first of all, that's a really good lesson. And I'm glad you followed up with that last statement, Lydia, because you are right. When we do talk, or even internally, quite frankly, for the first 4 or 5 years of running this, we're trying to be all things to all people. And anyone listening that's in startup mode, that's just the nature of it. You're trying to bring in revenue and you're trying to set up systems and process. You have to do that. But at some point, you do have to find your niche and really try to focus on that. Whenever we try to tell this to other people or even to my internal team, it doesn't mean we're excluding other people. Mm-hmm. It just means that our marketing efforts and our sales efforts and our language and our branding is focused on that particular niche, and we're going to pick up other people anyway. It's like a target, right? You're going for a bullseye, but you're going to miss occasion. You're still going to catch people outside of that center ring. So everyone seems to, it almost brings a sense of panic to them when you say, do you have a niche? Mm-hmm. Oh, because right away they're thinking, I'm going to lose all this revenue. Well, no, you're not. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. you shouldn't anyway, depending how you mm-hmm. do it. I had somebody, mm-hmm. I want your opinion yeah. on this. I was talking sure. about this with a client the other day, and their comment, I didn't really have a good answer for them, was, well, what if this particular niche that I'm going after ceases to exist because of, you know, in their case, it was AI related.
Mm.
So how would you address that to somebody that may be listening, thinking, well, I don't want to niche down because what if that gets eliminated and now I don't have a niche anymore?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was going to say a caveat of like niching down. I mean, you have to niche down to a certain point, but you don't want to niche so small that there's like five people who are your potential client, right? I know that's not yes. what you're asking me, but sorry, I also just want to clarify for people listening that obviously what Pat and I are saying is not you're getting to the smidgiest smidge of clients. It's still like, so for example, my clients were women, basically in their 40s and 50s, and their goal was to get stronger, not necessarily lose weight. So those were kind of like my three descriptors, and that was the language that I used. So you can imagine there's a lot of women out there in their 40s and 50s in Ottawa, right? And their goal is to get stronger. So just as an example, that's a niche, but it's not eliminating myself to like the five people that exist in that category. I think when it comes to the niche and worrying about if the niche is going to exist or not, I guess it just depends on the likelihood of that niche not existing. And I do think if you can use that niche, do it, make a lot of money or make some money with that niche, and then something has to change. And if you can change with it, then great. You've still been successful. You've still been able to bring in some income and some revenue on that. But sometimes it does take thinking about, especially with AI, that's so very specific, and AI yes. is changing like literally every day. So that might be a more tricky one. But I think for most people, the niche is going to be there. And I think it's probably one of those things where, except for maybe AI, your niche isn't going to disappear in like a snap of a finger. You might see the signs if you're looking for them. So again, that's also something, you know, you want to do is pay attention to, does my niche still exist? Am I still serving them in the way that they need to be served? You know, these are kinds of questions that you want to be asking yourself regularly. Have their pain points changed? You know, is there new information out there now that people know about that you want to be talking about, right? So you're always, especially from a marketing perspective, you're always changing and evolving and growing and improving, right? The marketing efforts that you're putting out there.
And, you know, for our listeners, just to expand on Lydia's earlier point, it doesn't mean a niche by itself doesn't mean it has to be so fine. I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. In our case, our niche, we call it health and wellness. So that's a very broad category. Mm-hmm. And there's mm-hmm. multiple sub categories under health and wellness. But mm-hmm. we're confident mm-hmm. with that because we're not just going after physiotherapist or mm-hmm. massage therapist or, you know, health mm-hmm. practitioners. We're not that niche. And there are mm-hmm. a lot of agencies that are niche that yeah. That narrow. Yeah. Personally, I wouldn't find that, you know, doing the same work over and over again, I personally wouldn't find that rewarding. But to mm-hmm. our listeners, my point is to our listeners, you know, it doesn't have to mm-hmm. be so like Lydia said earlier, you know, mm-hmm. a group of five. That's not what we're talking about. Yeah. It's, I think, Lydia, correct me if I'm wrong, what you're saying is have a focus.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then, and what I learned too in my learnings was you can start a bit bigger. And then I find sometimes like you kind of grow with confidence when you see like, oh, this works. And then you kind of narrow a little bit, and then maybe you narrow a little bit more. And so even let's say for my category that I described as my example, maybe instead of women in their 40s and 50s, maybe I'm specifically now narrowing to women in perimenopause, right? Yeah. And so again, that's just small niching down, but there's still a whole heck of people of women who are in perimenopause, right? So yeah. I find the more I niched, and I saw that I was bringing in clients, and easier, the more I was like, this is great. I want to niche even more to make it even more tight and more focused. But I find it does come with, even like Pat and I can say this works, you have to try it to believe it.
Yeah,
agreed. And see that it actually does work. Because I knew it for so many years. Part of it was my own personal ethos, where it's like, I don't want to exclude anyone. I was bullied as a child, and so I was often excluded. And so I think that weird psychology was playing into things, where like that was holding me back. And I kind of had to like heal or get over that piece and realize that I'm not hurting somebody's feelings by not targeting them. And so some people may have that sort of internal struggle as well. And so, you know, everybody's on their own journey, but highly encourage you to consider doing this if you're not already.
So Lydia, for those listeners that are considering starting a business, what advice would you give them?
Oh, gosh. how much time do we have, Pat? there's so many things. I would say a few things are coming to my mind. So one would be, talk to others in your industry. There's lots of people out there who are happy to talk to you, even though you may be coming on as a competitor. One of the things that I did want to mention that came across my mind when we were talking is that I have an abundance mindset. It's something that I've learned and developed. So I truly believe that there are enough people out there, like enough clients out there for everybody, right? So I'm always happy to talk to people in my industry. Literally today, I referred a potential client to a colleague because they asked me to do something on a day when I'm not available. And it's a fixed day. They can't change the date. So literally, a gal who is pretty much a competitor, I referred them to her. And I hope that they hire her. And she's referred to me. You know what I mean? So have an abundant mindset, for starters. But so try and find other people in your industry who also believe that way and will give you advice and tell you maybe some of the mistakes that they made. Also, crunch the numbers. Really have a hard look at your projected revenues. What expenses can you have? Where can you keep your expenses lower? I highly recommend the book called Profit First by Michael.
He's got a strange last name. I've got
it's like a Polish last name, I think. It's a little long. I can't recall it now. Anyway, super, super great book called Profit First. If you just search Profit First, Michael, it will come up. Changed my life, changed my business life. It's basically all about making a profit in your business. And I love his point about, if your business isn't making a profit, it's a hobby. And I think, you know, especially for like smaller entrepreneurs, like that's very true. And a lot of people don't want to come to that realization, but there are ways that you can be making a profit. So that would be another tip I would have. And one of the things actually that I like to talk about a lot these days is the idea of joy and following the joy. And I mentioned about even how I got into this industry, which was just that I really enjoyed doing this workout class. You know, I mentioned that I've done so many things throughout the years in my business, and all of it, all the times of why I changed was because I was doing what brought me fulfillment and enjoyment. And especially as a service provider, like I'm not making widgets, right? I'm dealing with people. I am not going to be giving them my best if I'm only doing it out of rote behaviors, or just because like I think this is the best way to make money, or like I've just been doing it for 5 years, so I should keep doing it, right? If I don't like it anymore, then I change. And that's why I've done so many different things and tried so many different things, is because you know, I grew, I evolved, I learned new skills, and I decided to try something different, right? And I think too often entrepreneurs get locked in that, like, but I've invested so much time.
So Lydia, where can our listeners find out more about your company?
Yeah, of course, they can check out my website at fithealthy365.com, or find me on LinkedIn, just search Lydia DeFrancesco. I'm very active there, share lots of wisdom, and would be happy to connect with you.
Thanks so much for doing this, Lydia. Really appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Pat. So happy to be here.
If your company or organization is looking to improve your marketing, go to the Extension Marketing website at extensionmarketing.com and book a discovery call today.